everyone, and welcome to Retro Reminisce, the gaming podcast that basks in the golden age of gaming by delivering a weekly dose of old school nostalgia. This is episode number 14, and this week we're going to be talking about Super Metroid for the Super Nintendo, a very influential action platformer that many consider to be one of the best games ever created. We'll discuss memories of this classic title, how well it holds up 22 years later, and just some overall impressions of it in the modern day. We'll give you guys some current pricing trends as well in case you would like to check it out for yourself. Before we get started, don't forget to head on over to thegamingoutsider.com and check out our video game podcast, our articles, our subscribe links, and our social media links as well. Feedback is greatly appreciated, so use the email links to let us know how we're doing. Also, subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn, and more. Last week, we released episode 13, and that was all about Batman, the video game for the NES, so check that out if you have not. I'm your host, Josh Faulkner, and I'm here with my co-host, as always, Justin Wilson. Justin, what's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going? How was your week?
It's been pretty good, man. I've been on vacation this week, so more of a staycation, really. I mean, I haven't done a whole lot of anything, but just trying to spend time with the kid. How about you, man?
Oh, it was a pretty good week. I had my birthday, so that was nice. You know, getting the house ready for the in-laws to come over. And yeah, it was pretty fun. I got the new wing of Hearthstone, so I got that to look forward to. That was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, late happy birthday, man.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a busy one, but it was fun. Cooked out, had fun, you know, the usual stuff.
Sounds good, man. And we also have Scott Clark here returning to the podcast as well. Scott, what's going on, man?
Well, man, you're on vacation, but I'm about as far away from vacation as you can get at this point. I am very, very busy.
I heard, man. You're like teaching cross country and stuff now, right?
Yeah, it eats up a lot more time than I thought it was going to. I'm pretty much doing 12-hour days, 5 days a week now. So
how did you get riled up into that? Like, did you just think Scott would just be an awesome cross country coach?
Yeah, this big video game nerd, let's make him a coach of something sports related. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. No,
How'd that happen?
My coworker who teaches fourth grade with me is a big runner, and he knows that I was into running for a while there. I did a couple half marathons, and I mean, his classroom is right next to mine, and we're friends. We work together every single day, and he started to do it and had to get an assistant coach, and just hit me up. We started talking about it, and it's actually a paid gig, as opposed to coaching basketball in elementary school where it's all volunteer. Yeah. So I was, always can use some extra money and that kind of thing, and said, want to give it a shot and try to make a difference and learn about the sport. I had no idea how cross country worked before I did it, but I've learned a lot and I'm having a lot of fun with it. And I'm actually like the weightlifting instructor for our team now. So, which sounds weird, but I actually do lift. Yeah. But as of like this week, he hands the kids off to me after they do their run, and then I take them to the weight room and do some core activities and teach them how to lift and stuff so that they get their core and upper body in shape for runs as well, too. So that's kind of fun.
Awesome. Very, very cool. Now, Justin, we have had some very awful technical difficulties with this podcast the last couple of weeks, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. It all started with my daughter getting an illness called hand, foot, and mouth. And long story short, she had a really bad fever and a rash that turned into blisters. So it was very exhausting on my end. And I ended up falling asleep, actually, the night we were supposed to cast because I had been up for so long. We had those technical difficulties with software where Skype wasn't wanting to work with your recording software.
Yeah. And I think I finally got that figured out. But the funny thing about this is that we recorded an episode twice and both recordings were useless. So we wasted probably over 2 hours, and the whole time we were covering the wrong game.
Yep.
What?
Paul LePage, if you're listening, Paul, he wrote in and wanted us to cover Jurassic Park. So we're like, all right, cool. Well, I thought he said the Genesis and Mega Drive version is what he wanted. So that's why I was like, okay, cool. We'll play the Genesis version. He actually wanted us to cover the Game Gear and Master System version. So I read his email wrong, and we went all through that mess, and we had the wrong game the whole time.
Oh my god, that's great! I didn't know that. That's funny. It was a fun game, though. I mean, it was okay.
Was it? No, it wasn't. Justin liked it more than I did.
It, yeah, I for what it was.
So I don't feel too bad about scrapping that episode now because we just didn't want to record it for a third time. So at that point, the conversation is no longer organic and it's just a bunch of people trying to recreate what they talked about the last time, and it doesn't feel as authentic. So we scrapped it, and we had the wrong game anyway. So Paul, I apologize, man. We'll correct that, and we'll do the Game Gear version at a later date. So
but we definitely have the wrong game this week. No, I am excited. Not.
Yes, yes. So let's jump right into it then. Talk about Super Metroid. Now, this game came out in March of 1994 on the Super Nintendo. It was developed and published both by Nintendo, and it's an action platformer. Very popular series. This game came after two games in the series. The first one originally came out on the original Nintendo, and it was really big for its time, but the game didn't age too well. It uses a password system, and it doesn't have very good progression. It's a little harder to play nowadays, and the game's just downright tough. But the cool thing is that it has a lot of elements in the game that appear in Super Metroid, so if you played through that game, it's pretty cool. You'll get some good throwbacks, and we'll have Scott get into that here in a little bit. But the following that was Metroid 2 Return of Samus on the original Game Boy. Now, this game is where Metroid started to really mold into what it is today as we know and love. And it really helped develop the whole Metroidvania style of gameplay, too. And it had save spots and a battery backup. The whole shebang. And it was a much better game, but at the same time, it was a lot harder to play because the progression was a little slower because everything felt like you had to find secrets in order to get to your main route to progress through the game. Mm-hmm. And it became a little more annoying in that regard, at least on my end. But again, this game, it continues with Super Metroid. So if you played Metroid 2, you're getting a lot of story elements that are in Super Metroid that you may miss if you didn't play that game before, and it really helps Super Metroid. So there's that. Now, Scott, you are a huge fan of this game, right?
I am. I'm in the camp of those people you mentioned earlier that kind of ranks this one up as one of the greatest of all time. It's just one of my favorite games. I've played this probably it's probably my top five of games that I've played through multiple times in terms of how many times I've played through them. I just used to play through this all the time when I was a kid.
Gotcha. Now, Justin, you're not a Metroid fan, right? Not to say that you don't like them. You just never really played them, correct?
Yeah, I never really had much of a chance to play them. But I wouldn't say I'm not a fan after playing this one. It's a pretty sweet game. It's got everything. It's going for it.
Well, you started with the right one. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I am no stranger to the Metroid series. I played these games back when they came out. But Super Metroid, I did not, because I was a Genesis kid. I was not a Super Nintendo kid. I got a Super Nintendo in the 32-bit era when they were really cheap, and I had to go back and play a lot of those big popular games. And Super Metroid was one that I just never got around to playing at that time because I was too busy playing stuff like Chrono Trigger and Link to the Past and stuff like that. So this game was always on my gaming to beat bucket list, more or less, like one of those games that I wanted to finish, but I just never got around to. And I finally did that about a month ago. So we'll get into that in a little bit, too. I played through the game on the 3DS, and I'll let you guys know about that version. But that being said, I'm glad that I finally have this game under my belt and I have it finished, and I'm ready to talk about it at length. And that's what we're going to do right now. So, Scott, tell us a little bit about the story of Super Metroid. How does it tie into the other games?
Well, it ties in perfectly with the previous two games, and I'm gonna back up just a little bit and tell a little bit more of the history of the other games because it kind of really helps to talk about the story of the third one.
Yes.
Really, the story elements of Metroid games are really at the beginning and at the end. Everything in the middle is just exploring, and there's not a whole lot of story.
Yeah.
But the game, the original Metroid, took place on planet, I believe it's pronounced Zeebes. Z-E-B-E-S.
Zeebs. I always pronounce it Zeebs.
Zeebs, yeah.
It could be either way. I don't know.
And Samus is a bounty hunter that's sent to this planet to eradicate this species of aliens called Metroids that are being basically grown and or harvested by something called the Mother Brain. Which, when you say words like that, you just sound like such a total nerd from the 90s, right? Like Mother Brain.
It sounds like a Metal Gear game.
There you go. It does sound like a Metal Gear game. And I mean, that's pretty much the whole story of the first one. You just you discover that the final boss area of that is this level called Turian, and this is where the Metroids are living. And you kill them all, and then you kill Mother Brain and escape through the top, and that's it. Metroid 2 follows up shortly after, and Samus is sent to the home planet of the Metroids and basically said, okay, these things are a threat, and you have to go eradicate all of them. So you actually land on this planet. It's SR, I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, around 281, I believe, SR 281. Mm-hmm. And it really kind of sounds like Alien versus Aliens, doesn't it?
Like, yeah, the movies. Kind of.
So you send this planet to eradicate them, and it gets really cool because the Metroids actually start to mutate and get bigger and bigger, and you finally face off against this giant Metroid that you wind up having to, like, do the morph ball and roll up into its mouth and explode bombs into its belly, which is kind of cool. But when you finally beat that boss, all the Metroids are gone except for this tiny little hatchling that pops up out of an egg. And Samus is the first thing that it sees. And it basically latches onto her, not in a hostile manner, but almost in a childlike manner. Like it's become a part of Samus because it was the first thing it saw. And then that was the end of Metroid 2. Metroid 3 opens up with a scientist that Samus has brought this Metroid back to, has started studying this life form. It's still obviously a baby. So it takes place right after the events of Metroid 2. Like, she just got back and they started studying the Metroid.
Yeah.
And all hell breaks loose. Somebody breaks into this lab and steals this baby Metroid that's still, like, in a little capsule. And lo and behold, it's the well-known villain Ridley, who was from the original Metroid, which we were kind of geeking out.
Sigourney Weaver?
No, that's Ripley.
Oh, well, I was close.
Close. See, the aliens in parallels are pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. So Samus is basically runs to this station, tries to rescue the Metroid from Ridley, doesn't succeed. Ridley flies off with the baby Metroid in tow, and strangely enough, heads back to the same planet from the first Metroid game, which is Planet Zeebus, or Zeebs, however you said it. And the story goes from there that you're basically trying to hunt down Ridley and any other bosses that along the way and rescue the Metroid and figure out what to do with it at that point. I don't really know what her plan was until things started getting kind of crazy on the planet. But you're basically on the hunt to, again, do something with this Metroid, because your original mission was to eradicate them all. And now you got this one that's almost like a child
of yours. Yeah.
Right. So it almost becomes like a rescuing your kid mission. And that's basically it. So,
gotcha.
I don't know if we'll get into spoiler territory for the end of that or not, but.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. Yeah. This game's 22, 23 years old. So, you know what? It's okay. So, this is the 30 year anniversary mark for this series. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen a new Metroid game in quite some time, other than that Federation Force game that came out, which we're not even going to consider that a Metroid game. So whatever.
I've heard it's actually not that bad, but it's not a Metroid game.
Yeah, and I've heard it ties into a possibility of a sequel to Metroid Prime, but it's all, you know, just speculation right now. It's just like little hints. But yeah, the game's just kind of meh from what I've heard. I have not played it. If I got it dirt cheap, I'd probably check it out. I ain't paying $40 for it. But for a 30-year anniversary, Nintendo has been very quiet about this series, and the only thing we've gotten for this 30-year anniversary is a remake of Metroid 2 using Zero Mission's sort of style of gameplay, which Zero Mission, for those who don't know, is a remake of the original game for the GBA. So the only thing Nintendo did for the 30-year anniversary was put a cease and desist letter out to this company or whoever this little indie developer was and shut their project down. So, hey, happy 30th anniversary to Metroid. So, yeah. So Nintendo's not going to talk about it. So that's why we're here. We're going to talk about Metroid, and we'll do that by talking about Super Metroid.
Hopefully it doesn't get shut down.
Yeah, they're going to send us something too. So let's go into the gameplay. This game started sort of a genre, I guess you could say, that people consider Metroidvania. And the reason they call it that, because Metroid has this sort of progression style to where it's a 2D platformer in a way with a lot of action elements, but you're on a map. And you get to view the map and you can go to and fro wherever you want as long as you have the right tools to access all the areas. But essentially it's just one stage that just progresses further and further, and there's no black screens, no loading screens, nothing like that. And then there's just save locations all around, and you just hit those little stations and you can save your game. And the reason they call these Metroidvania games is because when Metroid Symphony of the Night came out, it sort of stole that same style of progression.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night?
I'm sorry, Castlevania. Yeah, Castle. Did I say Metroid?
You did.
Jesus Christ. Castlevania Symphony of the Night took that style of gameplay, and it's the same thing. So you're moving around, and you have free reign to go wherever you want, but there are some areas that you cannot access until you get certain items or kill certain enemies or whatnot. And then you have to kind of backtrack and do that. And then you also find upgrades as you're going. So your arsenal is always changing and your abilities are changing as you progress through.
Even that map on Symphony of the Night looks almost identical to Super Metroid. It's same colors and everything. It's just very, very similar.
Yeah. And I know this is a Metroid episode and I'm probably going to make some people mad, but I think Castlevania kind of does it better, if you ask me.
I'd second that.
In some ways, yes. Yes.
Yes. So that's where the name came from, Metroidvania. Castlevania started to use that same gameplay style in their later games, and that blew up for them. That kind of revitalized Castlevania. So we have a lot of games that use the same kind of style of gameplay and progression, and they're referred to as Metroidvania games. And this is what really started it, was this series. Now, the game is essentially just a platformer, right? But there's a lot of action elements. You're doing a lot of shooting and stuff like that. But Scott, tell us a little more about the gameplay and how this works compared to like just a typical platformer.
Well, I mean, like you said, you've got the map it's a 2D map, but it's got gravity to it. You know what I mean? So you're always like kind of stuck. You're always being pulled down, but the map moves from left to right and up and down. And your weapons become a big part of it because, like you said, the traversal has to do with the different tools that you need to acquire in order to get to different places. So you may need, let's say, the ice beam, which freezes enemies and then you can step on the enemies to get up to a higher place. Or you may need missiles to open up certain doors that will only be opened up with missiles. Or you need power bombs, which will only open up doors that are yellow. I mean, there's always different tools that to get you in different places, or the what do they even call it? Not the hook shot, but the grappling hook.
Grappling hook, yeah.
Which allows you to grapple onto certain areas and swing your way across to different areas. And that becomes the fun part of it for me, is just like coming across areas that you know you can't access, and then later finding an item and being like, oh, I can use that to go back to that spot. Now, where was that? And I got to go back and try to find it.
Yeah, it's like that aha moment. It's like, oh, I remember this area I was at previously where I couldn't get across this gap or something.
Right.
Now I have this super jump and I can just jump right over there, no problem. So you go back hunting for that. And then when you finally get back there, you may have found an upgrade and now you have a new ability. And it's just, you're always evolving as this game progresses and you're exploring new areas, and it just feels really, really fun to just to see what changes as you make your way through the game.
Totally.
And that's a style of gameplay that I've just grown to love, and anyone that tells me that this game's a Metroidvania game, like I'm down, like I'm ready to play it. So I that's one thing that I can thank Metroid for, is that it made an open world sort of style game in a 2D plane. So let's talk a little bit about the arsenal that Samus has. So she has like a, what would you call it? Like a, what's the weapon that she shoots with?
Her Mega Buster. Let's go.
Her Mega Buster. Yeah. Mega That's Buster. Almost what I wanted to say, but does it have a name?
Her arm cannon.
Arm cannon. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. But you also get other weapons or upgrades for that as well. Like there's one where you get a spread shot in a way. I don't think it's called a spread shot. I forgot the name of it, but it shoots like three beams at once.
It's the wave beam.
Yeah, there you go. And then there's one that will freeze enemies as well and stuff like that. So as you're going through the game, you're also getting weapons that just change up your basic attack as well and give it different buffs and stuff like that.
What was really cool about this one, though, was that it actually started to combine those things together. So if you got the ice beam and you got the wave beam, it became the ice wave beam, which, you know, nowadays doesn't seem like that big a deal. But in 1994, that was really freaking cool.
Yeah, and then your missiles get upgrades too. Like you get super missiles, and then you get, you get these little bombs where you can roll into a ball, and you can roll around like in vents and areas and stuff like that. And you can set a bomb that way, and then you get super bombs, and you're always improving your arsenal depending on where you go and what you find. Mm-hmm. And but I do have to say that there are some things in this game that I don't think quite aged very well. One for me is the wall jump. When you get that in the game, now luckily there's only like one spot in the game that I recall where you really had to use it, but it's not like a Ninja Gaiden game or like Batman, like we talked about last time, where you jump on the wall and you sort of stick to it, and then you can jump off and then stick to the other side and just make your way up. This game, like, there's not really like a feeling or like a tactile sort of, you know, like notification on the screen that you're sticking to the wall and you can jump, even though the animation of Samus changes, but it doesn't feel good at all. And I had a lot of problem with that. Did you guys notice that at all?
Well, the trick to it for me was because they give you like a little animation sequence of these little green alien guys that are doing it. And and they even like sing the little item song, the item collect song. I don't know if you picked up on that or not. They actually did dun 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 dun. You know that they actually sing that to you.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
And but it's like in this little high pitched chirp thing. It's kind of funny. But the trick I got to do that was it actually required a double tap in the opposite direction. So when you jump against the wall, you double tap the controller as you jump at the same time, and that was the trick to get that to work. It was rough. I don't remember that you had to do it though. I felt like I was able to get up through that with the speed boost deal, where like you run a certain distance and then you press down and then she can shoot straight up into the air.
Yeah.
You remember that ability?
Yes.
I remember being able to use that there. I didn't think it was required to do the wall jump. You had to do that to get out of there.
There was one spot that it may have been that I got an upgrade or something up there, but there was one spot in particular I remember I had to wall jump.
Okay.
Now I know that sometimes the screw attack will get you up there, which is basically when you jump, you turn into a ball and then you can kind of bounce up and keep going up further and further or forward or left or right further and further.
Yeah, it's like an infinite double jump.
Yeah, basically. But you have to get the timing down on that, because if you don't jump right at the right time, you'll just drop like a rock. And then that's hard to get down as well. But yeah, that's the only moment I realized that you had to use the double jump was in one spot. I never really remembered the wall jump. And I never really remembered having to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
So this game's packed full of collectibles, and that's one thing a lot of people do when they play this game. They try to go after the 100% run by collecting everything in the game. There's lots of missile upgrades and super bomb upgrades and stuff like that, that when you find them, you get to hold more in your inventory.
Energy tanks too.
Yes.
Energy tanks. Those are my favorite.
yeah, because they give you more health. Now, when you're playing this game, these are pretty much optional. Some of them are very well hidden. But I noticed that as you progress through the game, if you ignore these, it can make some boss battles pretty tough.
That's for sure.
Yeah, especially that last one, which we'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, so it feels like it's kind of essential. Like, you don't have to collect all of them, but it's definitely something that you want to chase while you're playing through this game, because it'll make your life a lot easier. Because there's several bosses in this game that are pretty tough, but all of them feel pretty much manageable for the most part. Have you guys noticed that too, or did you guys have any that you really, really struggled with?
I don't even know what it was, an eyeball on a bouncing string that shot pollen everywhere. He was super easy. Like, I found out right away that the trick to defeating him, it took me like 2 seconds to notice, oh, he can't reach in this corner. But the dragon that looked like a Shendo mixed with Godzilla, like the head of Shendo on Godzilla's body. I did not like him one bit.
Is that Kraid?
Kraid. Yep, that's his name.
He took me forever to defeat. That's actually one of the spots where I got stuck and had to set it down and walk away for a while, just because the Metroid controls to me are so new, let's say. They really have a unique control layout, control style with their D-pad and everything. And it really, it took some getting used to for me. So like the jumping, I would always jump off to the, you know, kind of messed up and everything. It just seemed kind of hard when I was doing that boss battle.
Yeah, and the thing about the controls too is that you can shoot diagonally by holding down the L and R triggers on the Super Nintendo controller.
I loved that.
Yeah, yep. And that's nice, but if you're playing on something like a Wii or a 3DS or something, that's not quite as easy. Like, this game was definitely designed for a Super Nintendo controller.
Totally.
And one thing that I noticed too by playing other variations of this game is that you have to press select in order to switch between your bombs and your standard gun. Or arm that, cannon or whatever you want to call it.
That caused a lot of fumbling too.
Yes, and if you're not playing this on Super Nintendo and you're playing on a different platform, that select button, whatever it's mapped to, could be very inconvenient to hit in a very speedy time to where you need to switch fast. Because there's several bosses where you can do a charge beam and hit it, or you can switch to a rocket real quick and shoot it or whatever. And there's many instances, especially with bosses, where you have to swap back and forth a lot. And that select button can be really hard to really pull that off at times. Did you have trouble with that, Scott, or did you just have no issues because you played this on Super Nintendo?
Well, I played it mostly on Super Nintendo, and I think that's just really a credit to how well-designed that controller was. I mean, yeah. with how many buttons were on that, which felt like a ton at the time, but it was awesome. Mm-hmm. Everything was right at your fingertips. I mean, it was a second nature to go hit select on that when you're doing that. I actually did play it on the Wii U as well. I bought it on there. I think it was like $8 or something. And yeah. I didn't have any problems like that, but I think the buttons on that are a little bit closer than they are on the 3DS. The 3DS, the select buttons are kind of like, I don't want to say buried, but they're like behind the faceplate of the 3DS. So you mm-hmm. almost like you can't just press them. You actually have to kind of like find it and push your finger in a little bit, as opposed to finding a button that's raised and press it down. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I was playing on the smaller new 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two little small buttons that are kind of down below the face buttons, and it's a lot harder to hit that select button. I kept hitting start a lot on accident and pausing the game and pulling up the menu. You can definitely tell that this game was primarily designed for that Super Nintendo controller, because it's really hard to translate that experience to a different type of controller.
Right.
So just beware, folks who want to play this on a more modern platform that want to experience that way, that this Super Nintendo controller is it's not a requirement. I played through the game without it, no problem, but it's going to help you a lot. So I still would consider the Super Nintendo version definitive.
You would think they'd map that button to like the touchscreen on a 3DS.
Yeah, no, they wouldn't let me do that. I played through all the settings. I tried to map it to like one of the little LZ buttons at the top too, and it wouldn't let me do that either. So yeah, there was no mapping, unfortunately. So let's talk about the level design in this game, because that's one thing this game has going for it. Now, everything feels like it's set up very well, that as you're progressing through the game, you're getting something new. And that's one thing I loved about this game. And part of what makes that magic happen is just the art design in this game. This game has some of the best atmosphere for a 16-bit game I've ever played.
I can't agree with you more. It's just, it's stunning. There's yeah. areas where like the water area, I think it's Meridia is the area mm-hmm. that's all underwater.
Yeah.
They just like, I mean, you obviously feel like you're in water because you move so slowly, but there's like this effect over it that just gives like this underwater feeling where it almost feels like it's moving even though you're not. That looks stunning when you, even before you get into there, when you run under some like waterfalls type things, it almost feels like there's like this gloss over her character. You can almost see like water droplets popping off of her. And, you know, mm-hmm. by today's standards, you're not seeing individual raindrops. You're seeing very pixelated things. But at the time, man, this just was, it looked really solid. It looked really good. And I just loved looking at it. You mentioned like the different upgrades and stuff. And that was one fun memory I have of it is watching somebody else play it that was further along in the game. And even Samus's character herself just looks like a completely different character. She looks bigger, stronger. Like when she jumps into does the ball thing, there's like electricity flowing through her. Yeah. It almost looked like, man, I can't wait to get that far in the game so I can look that awesome. Yeah. Just so many good memories of that game and just how good it looked.
And just starting from the beginning, when you fly to this planet and you come out of your ship and it's raining, and just that mood that it sets right then and there,
and the little thunder and lightning,
it's awesome. And there was a part of the game where they had like these kind of bubbles and they were glistening, and there was sort of this pulsating kind of effect coming off of them all around you, and I thought that was really cool because it made it feel really alien. And, you know, that's just a feeling that you didn't really get during these 16-bit games a lot, because they didn't really use a lot of fancy graphical effects or anything.
Right.
And this game just did so much cool stuff with the hardware that it's, and even to this day when you're playing it, a lot of them will catch you off guard and be like, wow, that's just really cool how they did that back mm-hmm. in the day.
Yeah. Looked very organic.
Yes, and I also love just how they design a lot of the segments in this game too, with this map. Is like, there was one part that I went down really deep into the map, and I found some upgrade or something, and then I came back and there was no way for me to get back up. I could not get back to where I came from, and there was this bird, and it just started running really fast and then stopping at the end of this hallway and then just flying up. And then it came back down, ran back, and kept doing it again. And I'm staring at this thing like, why is this bird jumping around and running really fast?
Yeah.
And then after a couple of minutes of staring at it, it hit me. It's actually teaching me how to get out. And right. I thought that was super cool as well. Like, there's a move where you, if you run, as soon as you get to the end of the hallway, you hold down and you'll launch yourself up into the air. And you'll go through this tube and then you'll go right back to where you were. And that's the first time I ever seen a game do that back then too, where it's just it's visually teaching you something without actually saying, hey, this is how you do that.
And there's no dialogue or anything like that. And you, like you said, you didn't even realize you were being taught something.
Yes.
You just thought you were seeing like just a random critter on this planet and just, oh, that's kind of cool. There's a little bird there. He's running away from me. Wait, what did he just do?
Yeah, totally. And there was one part of the game that I was really impressed with too, where you actually open up more of the map if you go through this tube. It's sort of like this tube, like it's surrounded by water, and mm-hmm. you'll see a little crack in it.
Yeah.
And if you actually blow off like a super like missile or something in there, or one of those like super bombs, it'll blow up that glass casing in this tube, and the water pours out, and then you can jump up through there and then get out.
Dude, I remember that specific moment the first time I figured that out. I was with my mm-hmm. best friend Roy at the time, and it was just like my buddy Roy. I played this game with him, and he loved to sit and watch me play this game. And he would tell me to search every nook and cranny with the search beam and try to bomb over there. He was like, as a kid, it was like almost annoying, but it was super fun to do because he never let me miss anything. But that moment when he did, he's like, why don't you just try a bomb there? I tried a bomb, nothing happened. And he's like, well, try a power bomb. We tried a power bomb. And they do this really cool thing with the timing in that section, because you do the power bomb and then like for like a split second, nothing happens. And then all of a sudden you see the shattering glass and it starts to crack, and then it just explodes and you fall down. And that moment was such an aha, awesome moment for both of us. We both like did fist pumps in the air, like that we figured it out. It was really cool.
Yeah, when I figured it out too, I was just kind of screwing around because you could tell that like there's more to the map here, but how do you get to it? And right. I mean, that's usually what you do in Metroid if you're stuck somewhere or you don't know how to get somewhere where it looks like there's something close.
Just bomb everywhere.
Basically just start bombing everything or just shooting missiles at everything. And that's how you progress through most of the game, because a lot of the routes that you have to go through are kind of hidden and you have to blast through walls to open up new areas to go through. And it doesn't do it as bad as Metroid 2 did. To where everything didn't really make sense where the secrets were to get you through. This game, they kind of did, and they did a really good job of walling you off in an area where you know there's a way forward, but there's not a way back. So you got to find something.
Right.
And it just adds to the testament of how awesome the level design is in this game and how they designed this world and how detailed everything was and how even a little crack in the glass is telling you that, hey, you got to do something here. And it's just today, it's a super impressive.
That's one thing I thought this game did. I mean, it did a lot of things, pretty much everything really well. But man, like, I was sitting there lost in an area, and then I see this little block that looks different than the rest. And they do a really good job of kind of pointing it out at the beginning that, hey, you can blow up walls, or hey, there's a secret here. But then later on in the game, kind of letting the hand holding fall off and have more completely hidden. But still, you know, like, you go into an area and there's not much there. You're like, well, it was just some bad guys. There's no power up or anything. You know, there's going to be something hidden in that room somewhere from, you know, your earlier experiences in the game.
Yeah, and there's scattered around the levels, and there's not a whole lot of them, but there's these map stations, and you can go up to them and you stick your little gun in it, and it basically gives you all the map data for that area. So it reveals the map for you without you having to actually go to those areas.
But not all of the map. There'll still be hidden areas that don't show up on there.
Yeah, but it kind of gives you a primary, you know, layout of what to expect. You'll start to see stuff on the map, and it's like, well, there's no rooms connecting that. Like, how do I get there? And that's when it starts making your mind think, well, you know what? There's got to be an alternate path that I'm not seeing. And that's when you start to experiment. So it's not just platforming, and it's not just, you know, shooting enemies down or you know, blowing stuff up, but it's sort of like a puzzle. Like, you have to try to figure out, well, if it's up here, this empty room that I haven't been to yet, then it has to be around this area where I got to find something to get there. And you sort of kind of take it on as a mystery. Like, I need to find out how to get to that room because there's probably a goodie there that I want or need. And that's when you just start to experiment, and it's really cool when you finally get yourself to that area. Mm-hmm. And again, just awesome how they design the levels in this game.
Totally. Can we talk a little bit of nostalgia about this, like memories and stuff?
Yeah, go for it.
There's two things I want to mention. And first was the first time I ever even knew that Super Metroid was a thing was a television commercial that just popped up randomly one night. And for the life of me, I cannot find this commercial on YouTube or anywhere. I saw it one time on TV, and I never saw it again. And if anybody out there can find a copy of this commercial, I just totally want to see it, because when this commercial happened, I about crapped my pants in excitement because I played the mess out of the original two Metroid games. It basically was a real simple commercial, but it was a dog sitting there in like an empty room. And this guy off screen holds out a steak and says, "Hey, boy, you want a nice big juicy steak?" And the dog just kind of looks around super bored. And he's like, "Oh, okay. Well, you want to play Metroid 3? And the dog just like lunges at the camera and gets all, you know, growly, rabid, you know, drool hanging from his teeth, whatever. And they just showed they showed the box art for Super Metroid. And that was like the whole commercial. But, you know, as a kid, before the days of the internet and before I had any kind of Nintendo Power Magazine subscription or anything like that, that was how I learned about that game. And it was just so freaking amazing. It was so good. And the other one moment I wanted to mention is, and I should have mentioned this when I was talking about the story, but the way that they introduce Super Metroid when you first land back on this planet, again, you're on this planet for the second time. And you kind of move to the left a little bit, but you eventually go to like this long chasm that goes straight down, which is very reminiscent of the way that Metroid 1 ended. After you defeat Mother Brain in the first first game, you have to escape the planet by jumping up this long chasm with like tiny little platforms that you have to land on, and it was very difficult as a kid.
Yeah.
But what's cool is when you're introduced to this in Super Metroid, you get to the bottom and you move to the right and you realize that you just went down the exact same chasm that you went up in the original game. And you're actually progressing through the game backwards. You were going through where the final boss was in the first game. You're actually there. You see the casing of where Mother Brain was. You see the little I can't remember what they called them, Zebedees or something like that. It was like the little power cell things that you had to kill before getting to Mother Brain. You're actually like crawling through those and then working your way up through Turian, where you were fighting the original Metroids. As a kid who played so much of their first two Metroid games, that was just such an awesome moment. I'm like, I'm here again. I'm back where I started this whole freaking story, but I'm going through it backwards. That was just so cool to me as a kid. It just, I'm getting goosebumps like thinking about the first time I experienced that and how cool it was.
Yeah, and I never finished the original Metroid game because I just had too hard of a time trying to complete it. But I've seen that last boss fought many, many times. So when I came to that spot in the game, I recognized that boss. Mm-hmm. But so now that we're about to spoil something here. But so when the last boss in the first game was just like a brain sort of thing in like a glass like dome.
Yep.
And you just shot rockets at it and it blew up. Well, in this game, you start to do that and then the damn thing stands up and it has like a giant creature attached to it. And then you got to fight that and then that's the boss. So it's like it's kind of teaching going, hey, you remember this, guys? Oh, well, no. Well, now you got this coming at you. And that was a really cool moment. So even though I never finished that game, I still recognize that and I still got that feeling that from that boss battle. You know, now from what comes after it, I didn't really latch on to, but that moment I remember, and that was really cool.
Oh, I totally latched onto it. Can I talk about the ending?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Because like you said, you basically fight Mother Brain the exact same way. You know, you fight through some Metroids. You fight through the little barriers, something with the ZBDs or something. And you poke a hole in through the glass with a missile and then just pump a bunch of missiles into it. And the first time you play it and you beat that, you're like, wow, that was it? I was kind of hoping, you know, there'd be a little bit something more, but then, you know, like you said, the thing stands up and you have this whole fighting sequence against it, which you have to lose. You can't win it because it's the story is not allowing you to beat it. You know how games do that. And Mother Brain has this like charge beam that she charges up and basically presses you against the wall to do it. Samus drops to the ground and kind of starts heaving heavily like she's damaged. You can't move her. She's stunned. And Mother Brain goes to fire up one more blast that's going to basically finish you off. And off screen comes the baby Metroid that you were originally looking for in this game. But it's huge. It's the biggest Metroid you've ever seen. It's gigantic. And actually latches onto Mother Brain's head or core and starts sucking the life out of her. And you're watching this happen. And it basically finishes her off, or at least you think it finishes Mother Brain off, comes back to your rescue like it's coming back to Mother, and it replenishes all of your health. And Mother Brain slowly like wakes up and has one last gasp of life left in her, destroys the baby Metroid, which is now, again, giant. And it's like this super sad moment where it's attacking – Mother Brain is attacking the Metroid while it's healing you. So it basically died protecting Samus and then gives her this super ability to shoot this laser weapon that you use to finally finish off Mother Brain that has no chance against this thing. And it was just this awesome, bittersweet moment that told this really cool story without a single shred of dialogue. And you almost felt for this baby Metroid almost like it was your child. I don't know. And I'm 14 years old when I'm playing this. So, it's just such an awesome, beautiful moment. I think we actually talked about that in our emotional moments episode on the Gaming Outsider, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yep. And it was actually you talking about that is how I picked up on that because I never finished Metroid 2. So I didn't even know about the baby other than the opening segment where they mention this little Metroid that they're testing on, but they don't go really into a lot of detail.
Right. Well, what's even cooler about that is if you back up just a little bit before you get to Mother Brain, like you're fighting through Turian and fighting those Metroids just like you did in the first game. And you're just, you know, going along, heading left. You figure I'm heading for the boss. And you see the baby Metroid, but you don't realize that it's the baby Metroid. It just looks like a big freaking Metroid, right?
Yeah, and it kind of attacks you in a way, too. So you think that it's – I mean, it doesn't really quite attack you, but it looks like it's hostile.
Yeah.
And it gives off that feeling that it is, and it does something to you. I remember it, like, hits, it like latches on you and does something.
But then it recognizes you.
Yeah. And it makes it feel like that it is hostile, but then you hit that point where you find out it's not. And that's a cool little piece before that boss battle starts too.
Totally. And then it makes like this like chirping noise where it recognizes you and it makes like a friendly whatever. It was just so cool. Like how awesome is that something from 1994 could elicit an emotional response from a 14-year-old kid without any text, without any dialogue. Just you're just watching this happen, and it was just that's one of my favorite video game memories of all time. The first time I came across it was just so freaking cool.
Awesome. So that all being said, let's talk about how this game holds up today. Now, Justin, I'm going to start with you because you've been a little quiet there. I know, because we've actually finished this game and you have not, but you have played it quite a bit. So I'm going to start with you. As someone who hasn't finished the game and you played this for the first time, how well does this game hold up in 2016 for you?
Well, I guess I'd have to start off with it's the main reason why I'm excited that we do this podcast. Coming across games that I've never played that are just so exciting and so awesome. You know those feelings you get when you play something you just know you love for the first time? Well, a lot of us older gamers, we don't get to experience that too much with, you know, the older games. So it's a special feeling to be able, like, that whole beginning intro to this game was just beautiful. The graphics were awesome. They did an excellent job of really pulling you into the universe and really, you know, taking you for a ride with Samus and all that. It was awesome. Like, this game is awesome for all the right reasons. It's kind of reminds me of Zelda a little bit, in that it's hard to move around. Like, you can go anywhere you want, but there's stuff blocking your way, so you have to get this before you can do that. It had a lot of those kind of memory moments for me where I'm like, oh yeah, this feels great, because you discover this and you're like, oh man, now I can go back to all these places. And it just, this game hits all the right buttons on all the right levels. My only complaint was that I didn't much like the controls, but I know they kind of were doing their own thing with them, and it was fun. It's a really fun game.
Yeah, it's definitely a game that is much better played on a Super Nintendo controller, like we said. So, Scott, let's go ahead and go with you before I jump into it, because I just played it through it recently for the first time. Have you played through it recently, and how well does it hold it up for you?
Well, like I said, I played it on Wii U more recently. I actually didn't go all the way to the end, but I probably got about 2/3 of the way through. And granted, I have nostalgia glasses, so I still love the game very much, and I didn't have any problems playing it on Wii U, but it just still looks so good to me. To me, this is one of the pinnacle games on the Super Nintendo in terms of graphics and character movement. I love the controls on the Super Nintendo. It felt natural to me. But again, I also played the previous two games, so I was used to the jumps. You know, because like for instance, there's two ways to jump. You either jump first and then move the controller, or you move and jump at the same time and she does the spin move. And that takes some practice, but you know, once you have that down, it just becomes second nature. And I just felt like if I went right back into it, and that muscle memory was still there. But just the moments, even leading up to as far as I got playing it through more recently, were just still as awesome as they were. It just felt like home, like getting back on a bike. And this is one of those games that if someone says, hey, I'm thinking of trying this Super Nintendo game, what's one I should try? I would probably say Super Mario World first, just because that's very easily accessible. Everybody knows Mario, and that game still looks fantastic, especially since it's a launch game. But this one is probably in the top two or three of other ones that people should try, just because it doesn't have a super big barrier of entry, and the story isn't too long at the beginning, and you know, you have to lose that battle against Ridley anyway, so it's not like you have to even be really good at it to get through the story beats at the beginning. So I think it holds up beautifully, and I'm looking forward to playing through it again.
Awesome. Now, again, I played this game, you know, probably several years after the Super Nintendo kind of died off and we had the Nintendo 64. But I just never finished it. I actually own a cartridge, the Super Nintendo game. And again, I just never finished it. It's just something that I always wanted to do and never got around to. I just kind of played like an hour or two here and then just kind of stopped and moved on to something else. So I bought even though I own the Super Nintendo version, I bought the 3DS version for the new Nintendo 3DS. because I know that I would probably be more apt to play through it if I could lay in bed and play before I went to bed every night. Just knocked out a little bit every night until I finished it. And that was my goal. So I bought it. I sat down. I laid in bed and I played it a little bit every night. And it took me about a week. It was a little bit under 6 hours for me to finish the game. And this is the first time I played through it from start to finish. And I was hooked. I could not stop playing it. I looked forward to going to bed at night so I could lay there and play this game. That's how awesome it was. And it wasn't something that I would play a little bit of. I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of tired of playing this right now. I need to put it down and I'll play it another day. Like, no, man, I played until I looked at the clock and it was like, damn it. I got to go to bed. I can't stay up anymore and play this. So I breezed through it pretty fast because I stuck with it so much. And that's very hard for me to do because I have so many games and I have such a big backlog. And Scott and I do the Gaming Outsider and we're always trying to play something new so we have something new to talk about. And for me to put everything on hiatus to play this game speaks a lot of its quality that I was able to do that. Now, there are a few complaints that I have about the game. One, how the controls don't really translate as well to some controllers as it does the Super Nintendo controller, like that's the select button switching missiles and stuff like that. Sometimes it's a little easy to get lost in this game, too. There was one moment where I did have to resort to a guide because I really could not figure out what to do next. And it was something like really stupid that I would not have even noticed unless I would have looked at that guide. I think that it is easy to miss. There's one weapon in general. I think it was like that. What did you call it, Scott? Like the spread shot gun?
The wave beam.
The wave beam. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't even think you can go through the whole game without even picking that up.
Correct.
So there's very helpful weapons that if you're not aware of them or if you don't find them, you could go through the whole game without having them, and it kind of handicaps you a little bit. I noticed you can still finish the game without it. But you're going to make things harder for yourself. I felt like the save spots were a little too spread far apart, and a lot of them relied on you using shortcuts to backtrack to them. And that would a lot of the times mean having to rediscover some of those secrets that you found that are a little harder to get to. Mm-hmm. And some of them meant that you had to trek through areas that are a little more annoying in order to get back to some of those save spots.
Yeah, I can see that too. I think the game was also designed though to let you kind of farm for health and stuff a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a lot of instances in the game like you'll see these little tubes where these little like fly looking enemies come out. You can just sit there and shoot at them all day and get all the health you want and keep going. So those guys are
my favorite parts.
Yeah, and they even throw those at you like before bosses and stuff too. So I get that. But if you die before you get to another one of those save spots, though, you can actually end up losing a lot of progress. So that's not really the game's fault. I mean, it's a 22-year-old game, you know, but to today's standards, you know, I feel like they would need to put a couple more in there and some of the larger gaps without them. So I did thought that was a little bit of a bummer. Also, I hated Ridley in this game. I hated Ridley.
I remember you texting me talking about that fight.
Do I have something to dread about in the future?
Yeah. Well, you remember just in the beginning of the game, the big like dragon looking boss that took the Metroid and flew away. Yeah. You had to fight it as the first boss you fought. And that was a pretty tough battle, but you're supposed to lose it anyways. You have to fight that thing legit towards the end of the game.
As soon as that boss popped up, I was like, I have a feeling I'm supposed to lose this, but I tried my hardest. I really did.
Yeah.
You actually can win that fight where like you can actually damage him enough that he flies away without your health getting below that threshold. But it is difficult. It's really difficult.
Yeah. And now you mention that, I mean, there's a lot of moments in this game where there's surprises too. Like, you know, the Chozo things that like the statues that are always holding the balls where you shoot them and you get your new upgrade. The one that comes to life on you.
Shit bricks.
Yeah. Like that.
I went to the door and I'm like, why won't it let me through the door? And all of a sudden the flakes start to fall off from him. And I'm like, well, fuck, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
I had just wasted all of my rockets accidentally before going into that room.
Yeah, it's one of the great like kind of jump scares in this game that from like in gaming is in general, because I remember when I hit that moment, that thing stood up on me. I'm like, oh my God. And then I started fighting it. And I that just appeared to me when you were talking about that.
It was such a tiny room too. Like I didn't know what to do. I was like, I got nowhere to go.
Yeah, imagine being 14 years old and seeing those Chozo statues for the past two games and never having one come to life.
Oh, yeah.
And just like this sense of dread just washed over me for a split second. It's awesome.
Yeah, and every time you fight a boss, like it's pretty obvious there's a boss going to appear because the room's usually pretty large. And yeah, that's a very tiny room. And you're like, oh, hey, cool, new upgrade. Boom, thing comes to life at you. It was a really, really cool moment.
I got very shy after that. Every time I saw one, I got very shy.
Yeah. And even that first Ridley boss fight, when you walk in that room, you see the eye shining and then it appears in the darkness and it comes at you. Like there's really, really cool moments like that in the game. But the Ridley boss fight at the end, like I struggled with that thing. And I remember texting Scott, like, Scott, I can't do this. I can't beat it. I'm just about to give up. This sucks. You know, and right after I was bitching to Scott about it, I tried one more time and I beat him. But like I kept running out of rockets. His health, like his hits just take a lot of your health. It's a struggle of a boss fight.
Well, and to be fair, you kind of barreled through the game pretty quickly and didn't do a lot of, you know, searching for extra missile capacities and that kind of thing too. So I think a natural player, and I'm not saying you're not a natural player, but you have other games you want to play. You want to kind of get through it just to be able to say you finished it.
Yeah.
My favorite way to play that game was to go through and just scour everything. So by the time I got to Ridley, I was just overpowered almost. You know what I mean? It wasn't as difficult for me. So
and in that moment, I had all the energy tanks, but I didn't have all the reserve ones.
Ah, okay.
And for those who don't know, there you get a reserve tank to where every time you run out of all of your energy tanks, which is like your life, you have a health bar. When it hits zero, it pops into a new energy tank and you get a new bar. Once you run out of energy tanks, you get no more health bars and you're dead. And you get reserve ones too. So when you run out of all your energy tanks, it gives you basically an extra health bar. And you can get multiples of those too. And I only had one of them. So even though I had all the health tanks, the energy tanks, I only had one reserve and that hurt me. And I only had like 60, I think, rockets. And then the super rockets, I had maybe like 30.
Yeah.
And the super rockets are the ones that – they're super missiles, I mean, are the ones that are really going to do a lot of damage. Other than that, you have to kind of rely on your charge beam for Ridley to do most of the damage. And that thing's just too slow for as much as this thing's attacking you. So you have to really go into this with a lot of super missiles in order to make it easy. And I didn't, and I really struggled with Ridley. But, man, those attack patterns are just – oh, they're so hard to read.
Yeah, they are.
And And it's a struggle. And that was the only boss fight in the game that really gave me trouble. All the other ones were very manageable.
Speaking of the super missiles, we didn't mm-hmm. We should have talked about this earlier, but I love the feeling of shooting the super missiles. Like mm-hmm. the missiles kind of had a little bit of oomph to them, but the super missiles like almost made the whole screen shake.
Bad guys will pop down from the ceiling that weren't originally there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just because awesome. It shakes them out of the rock or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, and also I wanted to mention too, you mentioned that you kept dying at or maybe you weren't dying, you just ran out of missiles and stuff, but mm-hmm. how cool is the death animation in this game?
Oh, it was sweet. I thought it was that pretty unique for the SNES? Like I don't remember too many other games
where it put like a spotlight on her.
Yeah, and she kind of like faded away.
Yeah, well, it goes dark and she like crouches and like her suit breaks off and then she kind of fades.
Yeah. I mean, I know like in Link, he kind of spins around and falls down and ooh, ooh, ooh. But this one, it really like, I don't know, you didn't feel so bad dying because the animation was really nice and that final music it plays is really soothing. So it's not like a middle finger in your face or anything.
Well, plus you got to remember too, the original Metroid game didn't reveal that Samus was a woman until the very end of the game and only if you finish the game under a certain time. So the fact that they just, they reveal in a death that, you know, there's a woman under this suit, by the way, you know what I mean? And that was just, it was just kind of cool that they didn't have to hide that. I mean, obviously it wasn't a secret at that point, but if you were new to the game, you might not have known. Well, no, I guess they showed at the beginning that she was a woman.
Yeah. I think they do actually. So yeah, I mean, going back to this game and actually finishing it, it just feels great. I mean, it's a one of those, like I said, I like to call it my gaming bucket list. Just those games I never finished that I really wanted to, and I got to knock this one off. This was probably number one on my list.
Nice.
And the game is it holds up well today. And even if you didn't grow up in this era and played this game, you get to still witness its brilliance. Like the effects are still just as strong today as they were back in 1994. Mm-hmm. So it's a great game to still go back and play. And even if you're a younger gamer and you didn't grow up in that era, I highly recommend you check it out on a modern service and play this game because it is fantastic. Yeah. Now, only time will tell if it's like one of my favorite games ever. But I can definitely see why it's so high on everyone's favorite games of all time list. And it may even end up finding a spot on mine at some point. But that's just something I'm going to have to spend probably a couple of years really thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think this game really, really showcased the potential of the Super Nintendo better than at least any other game I've seen.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Scott, I'm going to go ahead and throw a curveball at you real quick because you're a big Zelda fan. What would you prefer, this game or Link to the Past?
Well, I mean, Link to the Past is still my favorite game of all time, but a lot of that has to do with Zelda having the puzzle element that I just loved, and plus just the epic feel of you know, rescuing a princess and that kind of thing. Just Zelda holds a special place in my heart. I would put that above this, but not by much.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, there are a lot of sequels for this game as well. We haven't got one in quite a while, but it spawned off into the Metroid Prime series when it hit GameCube, and that was a pretty big turning point for the series, and I love the Metroid Prime games.
Oh, me too.
I never finished the second one, though. Actually, I've never played the second one. I played and finished the first and the third, but I never even touched the second one, so that's one I need to go back and play.
The second one is a little bit of a slog.
I've heard. That's why I never touched it.
Yeah, I mean, it's still fun, but there's moments at the end where you're jumping back and forth between a light world and a dark world that that just get very repetitive, and it was a struggle to finish that one, but I did finish it. Man, that final area is really hard, too.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. And then we have Zero Mission, which is the remake of the original game.
So good.
And then we have Fusion, which is a brand new. It was an exclusive to the Game Boy Advance. It was a brand new game at that time, which was is essentially like the sequel, I would think, to Super Metroid. I mean, it was the first original 2D Metroid game after that.
Yep.
Solid. That's on the game. Yeah, that's on the Game Boy Advance as well, so definitely check that out. That's a good one, too. That's one, again, that I've played and I own, but I've never finished, so I need to get back to that one as well. Justin, just as for someone like you who just hasn't been into the Metroid series, I would highly recommend you play Prime at some point because a lot of these moments that we're talking about in this game that were just revolutionary for the time and so cool, like Metroid Prime has a lot of those moments in it, too.
Oh, I'd say you guys have definitely changed my opinion. I really didn't have much of one to begin with. I just didn't like the I believe I played one of the first Metroids, and I just didn't like the movement at all, and it turned me off from the whole series for a long time just because there's so many other options for games. But you guys got me hooked. I'm definitely going to be going through and playing the older ones and really, you know, getting to know the characters and the storyline a lot more. This game is a blast.
Well, yeah, especially yeah. Metroid Prime. Metroid Prime feels a lot more modern in terms of, you know, it transitions to third-person shooter. And the lock-on mechanic really works really well, and it's a lot of fun to play. Plus, you get some of those nostalgic moments, even though you haven't played the others, but you've played some of Metroid, Super Metroid. You get a lot of the same enemies, like the Skrees, those, like, green bat things that, like, kind of barrel down into the ground
or
in there.
Yeah, those things are annoying.
But they're in the game, and it's just kind of cool to be, these are some of the same enemies. The little guys that crawl around on the floor and then upside down on the platforms and stuff and just go around in circles, those are in the game. Ridley's in the game. I mean, it's just there's little moments that show the statues are in the game. It's just so I felt like I was almost experiencing the same universe just from a different point of view.
And that's what's got me so hooked is the fact they do such an excellent job of pulling you into the universe, like almost like Lord of the Rings or Star Wars. You know, you want to know the story, you want to know the characters, you want to know what happens. And that's really kind of the fuel of the entire Metroid series. That and, you know, excellent gameplay, of course.
Yeah, I remember the first time I played Metroid Prime, just seeing the rain beat down on the visor in first person, and then seeing that reflection of Samus's face in the visor was like the coolest thing ever.
That was so cool.
Super awesome. And I mean, there's just moments like that just like Super Metroid, man, when you hit him, you're just like, wow, that's really cool.
There's one other thing I want to mention about Super Metroid before we wrap up, and that's the music.
I thought the music was great.
It is so good. It's just because Metroid by nature is kind of a game of isolation. Samus doesn't have any buddies with her or anything. And the music, which a lot of it actually carries some of the same themes from the original game, even probably not the second one, but the original game for sure. Just give the game like this ominous loneliness to it that just really feel off-putting in a good way, especially like when you get into like the there's like a derelict spaceship at some point where there's actually hardly any any music. You're just hearing ambient noise. When you're in the Meridian area, just feel the music feels fluid. It's just so good. And I got to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Grant Henry, who we actually had as a guest on the Gaming Outsider. He started a little music band called Metroid Metal. And he just basically takes all the music from Metroid and turn it into metal music. Now, I don't mean like thrashing screamo or anything like that, just solid, like totally fits. And he really caught the essence of the music of this game that fits so well and really gave you the sense of isolation that they were going for. And if you like the music from this game, definitely check out Grant's stuff. He does a really good job there. So.
Yeah, he's on Spotify. Just search Metroid Metal, and you'll find his albums in there. And he does an awesome job with the music, and it sounds great. So, so let's talk about some pricing trends real quick. So, if you want to play this game full retro, how you would expect to on a Super Nintendo back in 1994, you're going to have to plop down some money for this game. A loose cartridge for the Super Nintendo game is about $40 to $50, and that's if it's in good shape. $40 if it's in a little worse shape, $50 if it's like just awesome looking, like no rips in the labels, anything like that. But you do have to watch out for replication cards too, because this is one of those Super Nintendo games where you'll find a lot of those where it's not a real authentic copy. The game's on there, but it's not real. It's just someone stamped a ROM onto a board and threw it in a replica Nintendo cartridge, and there you go. So you got to be careful for that too. There's actually a video on YouTube by a YouTuber named Heavy Metal Jesus, I think is his name.
I love that name.
And he has a guest on his podcast, not his podcast, I'm sorry, his YouTube channel, who owns a video game store, and she actually goes through all kinds of different things to look out for when you're buying Super Nintendo games and Game Boy games and stuff like that, to look for, to tell you if it's a replication card or not, because those are kind of flying around a lot. So people are making these games dirt cheap and trying to get the full value out of you for them, and it sucks, so watch out for that. If you can find a box copy of this game, it's about $150. $120 if you're looking at one of the lower-end stores that don't charge you as much, as gouge you as much. But, yeah, the box copy of this game costs a lot more. Now, I was at a retro shop recently, and they had just a loose cartridge for Super Metroid, and they wanted like $70 just for the cartridge itself. So I think it's even raising higher than the kind of pricing trends I'm giving you right now. Hmm. So this is a game that you want to grab because it seems to be getting higher and higher as the game gets older. Now, luckily, if you want to play this game and you don't want to blow that much money on it, there's multiple ways you can do that very cheaply. This game is available on pretty much any virtual console service on a modern Nintendo system. You can play it on the Wii, you can play it on the Wii U, and you can play it on the new Nintendo 3DS. Not the standard 3DS, the new Nintendo 3DS for
Which
some
that
odd
is
reason.
Bullshit, by the way. Can we just...
Yeah, I have no idea. There's nothing about that version that made me think that they needed that new Nintendo 3DS extra power.
Right.
It's really, really odd. But I will say that the new Nintendo 3DS version has this feature called Pixel Perfect Mode. And for a lot of you may have not known this, but the PAL and the NTSC, I think is what it is, the American version of the game, the aspect ratio it ran at on a TV was actually not what it was designed for originally, to where the game is actually slightly stretched out to fit the full 4:3 aspect ratio. Pixel Perfect Mode on a new Nintendo 3DS runs those Super Nintendo games as in the aspect ratio is actually designed for. So you get to see the game how it was actually created and designed. Because if you play Super Metroid on the Super Nintendo itself, the game is slightly stretched out.
Oh, man, so you shouldn't have told me that.
Yeah, so playing it in pixel perfect mode and the super sharp graphics is like the best this game has ever looked. It's awesome, and that's how I got to play it. And it's just super sharp looking, great colors, and it's in that pixel perfect mode. So Samus doesn't look fatter than she is on the Super Nintendo version. Everything kind of looks a little skinnier. That's actually how the game was designed.
Now Scott's got to go get the new Nintendo 3DS.
I do recommend those things, though. The extra power is really nice. Just how snappier the menus are and everything. Like, I couldn't go back to an old one. But yeah, so that's $8. I mean, in any one of those systems I just mentioned, you can play this game for only $8. So for $8, it's a no-brainer. Go grab it and play it. It's a great game. And it's definitely one of the best games ever made. I would definitely agree with that. I don't know if it's one of my best games ever made. Maybe time will tell, but it's definitely a fantastic game, and it deserves to be played. Everyone agree with that?
100%.
Wholeheartedly.
Well, that'll be it for this episode of Retro Reminisce. Again, I apologize for such a long period of time without us having an episode. We are definitely going to get back on track and have something every week for you guys moving forward. But Justin, thank you for jumping on here with us. I'm sorry we kind of overwhelmed you here since we've actually finished this game, but I hope you got to speak enough on it, and I hope you enjoyed playing as much as you did.
Oh, yeah, I'm having a great time playing. You guys just are very, very well-versed in the whole universe and everything, but I'll catch up. Don't you worry. We'll do an episode on Prime or something, and I'll talk your guys' ears off.
Awesome. Awesome. And thank you, Scott, for hopping on here, man. It's good to have a Metroid expert to talk about this game. So thanks, man.
Thanks for having me, man. I was so looking forward to doing this episode. Have been for quite a while, and I really had a good time chatting with you about it.
Awesome. So tune in next week. We'll be revisiting a new retro game for you guys. Head on over to thegamingoutsider.com for more and email us at feedback@thegamingoutsider.com. If there's a game you would like for us to cover on the show or just to give us any general feedback, we hope to see you guys next time. And as we leave, I would like to remind you all to visit a local retro shop, grab a golden oldie and game like it's 1989. Thanks, guys. See you next time.